Okay. Let's take up now the general subject of auditing dependency upon. And let's find that under our various lineups, we have dependency as a consideration of major proportions. Every once in a while in a unit, you get somebody who is not movable or remediable as a case. You know, they just keep hanging fire, hanging fire, hanging fire. Doesn't seem to be very much you could do. Well, this doesn't really apply to Procedure 30. You could blow them loose with that. You could blow them loose with a lot of other things. But you get this dependency on something somewhere. Now, anytime you see a pre-clear sitting there waiting for something to happen, you are sitting there looking at a pre-clear who has dependency trouble. He is depending upon something. You see that? Now, this is the defeating mechanism of all psychotherapy, healing, medicine, improvement, betterment, education, straight down the line. The whole works. The defeating mechanism in life is dependency. It is all right to use something or not to use it. But to decide that you cannot get along without it, or that it's now going to do everything, does not necessarily, but can become a fatal consideration. The dwindling spiral itself is measured by the repetitive consideration that one cannot do without something. Let's look that over very carefully. And now look at this fellow who years ago, while they still taught it and had it, studied psychology. And we get him in Scientology. Now, what do we do with him? Well, no, he has an awful hard time. He has a rough time. He has a rough time with this and that and so forth. He just has a rough time. Well, Scientology is trying to resolve and can, if the auditor knows it, Scientology is actually trying to resolve a long series of dependencies which eventually entered the field of depending upon some external mechanism to take care of and change his mind. Well, this would be the ultimate, because that is all he ever changed anything with, was his mind. And to depend upon something to change, alter, or improve his mind, independent of him and exterior to him, then poses an impossibility before Scientology. Therefore, it was not only difficult to do something for individuals before Scientology, it was impossible. Hence, you had this terrific defeatist attitude toward the mind. And yet, we can sum up this impossibility and these difficulties with all prior arts under this heading: a consideration that one was dependent upon anything to alter and improve his mind, because his mind is all that can alter or improve anything. Now let's look at that and find out that we have entered a rat race of magnitude. Now, as this is a very definite and extremely important part of Scientology, it does not then become a rat race in Scientology, except for this: when the individual is ignorant of the fundamentals of dependency and is using Scientology in ignorance of dependency, we could then bring about a condition where the individual was operating Scientology as the thing he was depending upon to change his mind for him. And the auditor would sit there being depended upon by the preclear to change the preclear's mind with some sort of a system. You see that? And this defeats then every activity of the auditor who is auditing in the absence of a knowledge of dependency. Psychoanalysis, knowing nothing about dependency, never could have improved anybody any at all. See that? Surgery, electric shock, psychiatry, witch doctoring, therefore hit a percentile, race after race, a percentile of about 22%. And this 22% that they improved were the 22% who then did not depend upon the healing art to change their minds, but who were still capable of changing their minds. And it became a constant figure because just about that percentage is capable of changing his mind. So, when we had any art or any science or anything, any mumbo-jumbo that anybody cared to come along with, he would immediately be able to produce results and write large testimonials if he neglected to mention his failures. Well, dependency itself, as a subject, has emerged into the open here during the last few months by observing the training difficulties of people who have been trained in various fields, people who have been trained in chiropractic, people who have been trained in psychology, people who have been trained here and there in this and that, and they get into one of these units, and the next thing we know, we're having a lot of difficulty with this individual, and Scientology doesn't seem to be able to do very much to the individual. So Scientology's techniques have become stronger and stronger, tougher and tougher, until they'd knock over practically anything. But there isn't any reason why Scientology should climb a big hill when it knows about this mechanism of dependency. This, of course, is no new mechanism. It is inherent in self-determinism, definitions of late 1952. It's inherent in that. Self-determinism is the antithesis of dependency. People go off into a wild rush, however, of independence, which is fighting dependency, and think then that this is the way to win. It isn't the way to win. The way to win is to use anything and everything and be able to use it or not use it at will. And that is about the most that could be stated about it. A person's self-determinism, when depending utterly upon something like psychoanalysis, would come up to the rationale of psychoanalysis and would then rise no higher. And so we get psychoanalysis thinking in terms not of a couple of hours or 10 hours or 20 hours in the office, but in terms of 10 years in psychoanalysis for a patient. And they closed terminals with this to such a degree that they said that a person who then would not become dependent, utterly dependent upon the analyst, was crazy. I mean, Their whole goal is to make the fellow entirely dependent upon the analyst. Until you get the analyst telling them where to eat and when to sleep and how many times they ought to do it and everything else, and being called up at 2 o'clock in the morning to find out whether or not this is propitious and so forth. And this is the essence of a cult. A cult is an organization of some sort which depends upon a class or a priesthood to determine its course of action by consultation with omens or procedures of some sort. That is a cult. Now, it's too broad a definition for one. Actually, it has maybe a lot of other characteristics. But therefore, you would have these high priests, psychoanalysts, sitting around answering the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning to find out to tell people whether or not they could have their wife. This is not new or strange in psychoanalysis. This is common. A fellow finally became entirely and utterly dependent upon his analyst. This position is extremely undesirable for an individual, both as a patient and as a priest. It is undesirable to use a Scientologist to be consulted every time you turn around by a bunch of free clears to find out whether or not they should sneeze. It's not what you're there for. Now, an individual's dependency upon a system first manifests itself on his dependency upon space to give him interest in motion, and comes in next on machines to send him around and produce things for him, to give him things. So your dependency is way back on the track, and those are the basic dependencies. First dependency is upon space. Second dependency upon the construction and maintenance, and then forgetting about and abandoning so that they still keep on working on one, machines. That's your second dependency. And the next is a series of communication systems of which the body is one. Dependency upon the body to communicate would demonstrate to you immediately that entire dependence upon the body to communicate would amount to a highly aberrative condition because it would keep cutting down the thetan self-determinism all the time. He would come up to a level of self-determinism of about the body's level, and that would be that. And it would not include being able to talk himself, as long as he depended upon the body talking. Now, you wonder why a thetan doesn't start to talk while he's exteriorized. Well, if he doesn't talk while he's exteriorized, or he's certain that he can't, you can only assume this, that he's entirely dependent upon the body to talk for him, and that this is his consideration, and his consideration amounts to the fact that he has to have a body. He has to be dependent upon something. He cannot do without it. Therefore, simply remedying the havingness on the item all by itself would have some result in curing dependency. Ever since we have had havingness as a process, for the last year or so, we've been able to remedy these dependencies even as early as just plain Gita. Because you start remedying havingness on an individual, creating abundances of various things, and the individual changes his value on these things. They were so scarce, they were very valuable. Now he recognizes he could have lots of them, so therefore they're not so valuable, so therefore he's not as dependent upon them. But that is a covert approach. Let's take a much more direct approach on this, and we discover that if we just knocked out the system, something the individual was dependent upon, in any process or with any process, we would then remedy that dependency. Well, think of this dependency in terms of a level of healing which, by a system, is supposed to change a person's mind. We find every one of these systems which has been cooked up by man failing somewhere along the line simply because it was supposed to change its mind somehow or another. The individual, no, he wasn't going to change his mind. The system was going to do something to him, which made the system senior to him and gave the system senior survival. And this is one of the places where you enter the level of dependency on its resolution, 8D. And one of the side effects of 8D is the remedying of dependency. Mama's universe, for instance. We start spotting spots in space. We are locating Mama. We are following some of the pre-logics, which are theta locates in space energy and objects. And you just start doing that with something you're dependent upon, and the next thing you know, you're controlling it. It's not controlling you. Just change its location in space. Take old 8C and start pushing around the consideration. Just push it around the room. And, you, of course, it changes its location in space, and so you're remedying dependency again. So we have been for a long while here into the very solid ground of remedying dependency. But again, covertly, how would you directly remedy dependency? First essence of dependency would be that the individual was occupying the same space as. That's a very crude, fast, mechanical definition. The second that you're into mechanics, you start occupying the same space as, you just eventually get into the situation where you've got a dependency on. Now, you can follow that all the way through and figure it out any way you like, but the funny part of it is once you start spotting coincident occupancy of space, you start resolving dependencies. Now, let's tell an individual, now let's see all the places where you have had machines of any kind. He says, you mean what? He just says, spots in space, come on. Wherever you've had any machine. Oh, for what week or what minute? I went, no, just spot all the spots in space when you ever had machines. Ooh. I don't know. I had a car once. I got a car now. Come think about it. It's outside. Where outside? Right out there. Right out, yeah. You wouldn't think that you would produce very much reaction. You're just trying to spot all the spots in space where the individual has coincided or had. Same definition, see. That's why having this is important, because it's just coincidence in space. Had any machine. Oh, he said, what do you mean by machine? Of course, he thinks you mean vehicles. After you got all the spots in space where he had cars pointed out, you could turn around and have him spot all the spots in space where he had any kind of mechanical appliance which helped him out, of any kind, including the electric light wires and all the clocks he's had and so on. You could go on for that for some little time, and he would suddenly discover of himself, if you ran the other long enough, he'd suddenly discover, you know, the body's a sort of a machine. Coincidence, but automaticity, that. You say, okay, now spot all the spots in space where you and a body have occupied the same space. You'd get an interesting setup, wouldn't you? That's a lot of spots, isn't it? Well, that's the definition of agreement upon. The heaviest identification, and here's where identification differentiation comes in. The heaviest identification there is occupying the same spot. So you got ARC, you see at the bottom scale, people are all forced into occupying the same spot as all other things, and you sort of get the fellow buttered all over the universe itself and then really condensed all the way down the line. This is the way it works. Occupy the same spot in space would bring about a dependency upon. The Thetan would remedy this one way or the other the second that he jettisoned a body. He could then change his mind. He could see that he didn't particularly need a body, and that for a short time change his mind about it, and then, of course, grab a hold of another body, and then occupy a lot of spots in space with that body. And, of course, he's dependent upon the body again. Now, a child does not exteriorize because he is a better Thetan than an adult. A child does not exteriorize easily because he is saner. He is not. A child does not exteriorize easily because he is simply more able. He is not. A child exteriorizes easily because he has less points of agreement with a body in space. He hasn't had as many points of agreement with that body in space as an adult. Your adult as a Thetan is actually in better shape than a child, even if he's still interiorized and spread around. He's actually in better shape. That's the truth of the matter. Things might not look as bright to him, however, because he has, to some degree, occluded his vision. He's done lots of things. But he has assumed a great many liabilities of the body because he is depending continually upon the body to do his communicating for him, to make him visible, also hide him, do this and that. He has a lot of considerations this way. But you enter this by spotting spots in space. Now, how does this solve the dependency upon space? Why, you say, look at that. Hey, way up the line up here, we have a higher level of consideration, and all we have to do is tackle that higher level of consideration, and we would remedy the individual dependency upon space for his interest in randomity, and you'd have it. Well, maybe you'd have it, and maybe you wouldn't. And theoretically, I can tell you that that is true, but I cannot tell you that from a standpoint of very practical experience, because I've never tried to use a process at this time which would strip off this complete dependency on space. I have not tried to do this. The very good reason that any process which I have dreamed up so far has exceeded the ability of the preclear to imagine. And his imagination is pretty well pinned down by space, and he normally is perfectly willing in theory to abandon all space. But this is abandon all space. And most of the cases you process, as the second you start processing them to get them independent of space, are doing so because they themselves have a certain horror of it, a fear of it, a this of it, that of it. So the way up to that level is through it, and the point of process, which is successful on it, is just the Thetan's changing his mind about having to have space. But where does he get that? He picks that up when he spotted all the space there is. When he spotted all these points of occupancy where he's coincided in various spaces with various things and so forth, of course he has lost all of his intolerance of space. And at that moment, of course, he can change his mind on the subject. Unless, of course, he's entirely indoctrinated into, depending upon the system, Scientology, in order to do it for him. Scientology, oddly enough, is slanted, however, in the direction of making the individual change his own mind. It is slanted in that direction, and as such, then, does not become a dependency system. In the first place, it isn't itself a system any more than the fact that the Thetan is here was a system. Same system. See, Scientology is approximating the system by which the Thetan got here and with the body. See, the considerations. He spotted these, that's that. All right, if this is the case, then you would expect all of these dependencies to run up the line, and this would rather uniformly run out Scientology itself. And so it does. Scientology being a parallel of these consecutive dependencies resolves by resolving these consecutive dependencies. So for the first time in the field of the mind, we are not working immediately and intimately in the direction of making an individual independent or dependent upon a science. We don't have to think about it too much. We don't have to think about it too much because its own processes are continuously resolving dependencies. Where those processes are not resolving dependencies and where they are creating dependencies occur in low-level cases who are already very, very anxious to have something to be dependent upon. But any resolution of this dependency idea on the part of the case, of course, remedies their attitude toward the science itself, and again, Scientology bails itself out. Wherever you find an individual depending upon ridges, depending upon the bank, depending upon a body, depending upon mama, depending upon anything to do something for him, which he then cannot do without, you discover an individual who is having a lot of difficulty because it can control his environment and he can't control back again against it. Actually, a great freedom in the environment occurs immediately that an individual recognizes that he can still use and is actually maybe for the first time able to use a great many things in the environment without being entirely dependent for his survival upon them. And there we move up into the higher echelon. We are already there with the definition of survival itself. The individual's worry and concern about survival brings about dependencies. His first worry is the fact that he's going to survive without time. His next worry is that he's got to survive across a pattern of some sort or another in order to have any interest in it. And this worry is resolved by cutting down his knowingness and having some space. Where do we find the individual crossing the line between must survive and must succumb? Actually, it's in reverse to what you would ordinarily consider it. And a Thetan's first consideration and first considerations, after quite a while on the track, are what are the best ways to succumb. And then he falls into the band where he's convinced himself that he can succumb, which is a neat trick. And his next series of considerations are how is he going to survive? And nearly everybody that you're going to have anything to do with up to the time you get them practically up to operating Thetan are going to be concerned with, let's see, how am I going to live through this? How am I going to survive this? And then you break a certain band, what we've called before the not knowingness band. We break up through that band and we get the individual's main concern is the fact that he's going to survive. See, and we run into the succumb computations of a highly rational character in that he's simply trying to cut down his knowingness. And he goes on trying to cut down his knowingness and cut it down and cut it down and cut it down. You process him up and he cuts it down. You process him up and he cuts it down again. Your contest is with the individual unwilling to go up to the realization that he can't do anything else but survive. And a second that he enters that particular field, he feels that everything would become very uninteresting to him. As a matter of fact, it does not. None of his fears anywhere on the track about anything are justified, and you can put that down in your book. He's just seeking for justifications. The fact that he will still seek for justification should tell you very adequately that nothing he does is justifiable. There isn't anything he can possibly justify anywhere. He doesn't have to have a reason for anything. You see? And so he seems to be then an enigma. But his enigma is the fact that because his survival is so bountiful, he must now work to even get a fragment of succumbing. And therefore, succumbing itself becomes a very valuable line. Anytime he could get into enough trouble to give himself just the vague pretense that he might not survive forever, he gets real happy about it. He thinks that's fine. His first realization then, first effort is to convince himself that he can die, that he can change, that he can forget who he is. Now we go down a little bit further, and he's convinced himself so well that he can succumb that now he gets anxious about his survival. He knows he's gone over the hump here, and he's in trouble now. He's in real trouble, and he can get very serious and very anxious about that, and his whole drive is towards survive. Now you get a mockery, a little mockery band down at the bottom of any tone scale, and again he enters the band where he's trying to succumb. Here you get the suicides and so forth. This is an echo of the upper band. The psychotic band is actually an echo of the upper band, which is not psychotic at all, except that it's utterly unreasonable. An individual knows he's going to survive forever, so his main concern is trying to cut his back his survival so that he at least can pretend that he can succumb. And anybody who's pushed up the line starts to run into this. He takes a look around and he says, "What do you know? I could just be like this forever without any difficulty whatsoever. Here I am. I can just be like this. That's all. And oh, gee, maybe it's not so good. So I guess maybe I better change my mind. Let me figure out now how a Thetan could possibly succumb. Well, let's see. He could forget something. And that is your first method of succumbing. You could forget something. You know, because everything you remember is sort of a little bit of you. And so, therefore, you could cut some of this off. So the first answer that a fellow goes into, and he sometimes goes into it rather extravagantly in his efforts to succumb, is a bad memory. Now, down at the bottom of the scale, we get a bad memory, but the bottom of the scale and the top of the scale are different. The top of the scale is in the individual's own control, and the bottom of the scale is not. So, top scale, he invites dependencies because he knows it's suicidal. You see, let's see, what can I become dependent upon now? Let's see, I'll dream up a machine, and every time I think the word abracadabra, and then I will forget what the word is, why, a big sword will suddenly jump out and cut me in half. That's fine. Now I'll forget what the word it was. Now I got that all set aside. And he goes off very happily, and then one day he all of a sudden thinks of this word abracadabra, doesn't even know that that's the word, and suddenly there's a big sword, and it cuts him in half. And he says, "Gee, that's terrible." Slurp. The other one is a machine that's quite common to a Thetan, very common to him, is a face will suddenly appear that will scare me away from wherever I am. A face will appear that's so horrible that it will frighten me away from it, and I'll just have to abandon everything and run because it'll be too frightening. He sets up a machine that will make a face on a certain signal. And sure enough, he'll get a death's head appearing or something like that. He'll be sitting up in a piece of his own space, and all of a sudden this death's head will appear. Then he discovers interpersonal relations. And this is a fairly good answer to him. And it furnishes interest, it furnishes all sorts of things. But as he goes down the line, then he figures interpersonal relationships are absolutely necessary. And he begins to depend on them. And then below that line, he says, "Oh my goodness, we mustn't have any interpersonal relationships. We must get away because they're going to destroy me." And so we get the dwindling spiral. Dependency is best solved by pointing out coincident spots in space where the individual coincided with whatever he was doing. Well, you can do this till you get the individual up to a point where he simply has to change his own mind about his dependency on space, and you've done it. But as far as a technique is concerned, which can be addressed to a low-level case which will solve his dependency on space, I know none, and I don't think I will know any. Because the individual has to clean up his immediate problem of space and change his mind in all the directions that he has to change his mind before he can get up to a level where he can make such a fundamental sweeping change as, "I am no longer dependent upon space." So again, your processing is laid out in this fashion. Many, many individual applications of this amongst them would be, where were all the places where you were in psychology classes? Spot all the spots where you were in psychology classes. Now, this is why we clean up auditing on auditors. Because there in an auditing session is where they have done their greatest amount of agreement with Scientology itself. And is itself, by the way, quite therapeutic after somebody has been audited for a while, particularly since he has not always had the most expert auditing there is. And this has a tendency to clean up the whole universe of Scientology. Okay.